and likewise the most strongly suppressed emotions of the psychic life. And when the First Consul incorporates the sound of an exploding bomb into a dream of battle before it causes him to wake, as is the case reported by Garnier, the purpose for which psychic activity generally concerns itself with sensations occurring during sleep is revealed with extraordinary clearness. A young lawyer who has been deeply preoccupied with his first great bankruptcy proceeding and who goes to sleep during the afternoon following acts just like the great Napoleon. He dreams about a certain G. Reich in Hussiatin, German Husten, to cough, whom he knows in connection with the bankruptcy proceeding. But Hussiatin forces itself upon his attention still further, with the result that he is obliged to awaken and hears his wife, who is suffering from bronchial catarrh, coughing violently. Let us compare the dream of Napoleon I, who incidentally was an excellent sleeper, with that of the sleepy student who was awakened by his landlady with the admonition that he must go to the hospital, who thereupon dreams himself into a bed in the hospital, and then sleeps on, with the following account of his motives. If I am already in the hospital, I shan't have to get up in order to go there. The latter is obviously a dream of convenience. The sleeper frankly admits to himself the motive for his dreaming. But he thereby reveals one of the secrets of dreaming in general. In a certain sense, all dreams are dreams of convenience. They serve the purpose of continuing sleep instead of awakening. The dream is the guardian of sleep, not the disturber of it. We shall justify this conception with respect to the psychic factors of awakening elsewhere. It is possible, however, at this point to prove its applicability to the influence exerted by objective external excitements. Either the mind does not concern itself at all with the causes of sensations, if it is able to do this in spite of their intensity and of their significance, which is well understood by it, or it employs the dream to deny these stimuli. Or thirdly, if it is forced to recognize the stimulus, it seeks to find that interpretation of the stimulus which shall represent the actual sensation as a component part of a situation which is desired and which is compatible with sleep. The actual sensation is woven into the dream in order to deprive it of its reality. Napoleon is permitted to go on sleeping. It is only a dream recollection of the thunder of the cannon at Arcole which is trying to disturb him. The wish to sleep by which the conscious ego has been suspended and which along with the dream censor contributes its share to the dream must thus always be taken into account as a motive for the formation of dreams, and every successful dream is a fulfillment of this wish. The relation of this general, regularly present, and invariable sleep wish to the other wishes of which now the one, now the other is fulfilled will be the subject of a further explanation. In the wish to sleep, we have discovered a factor capable of supplying the deficiency in the theory of Strumpel and Wundt, and of explaining the perversity and capriciousness in the interpretation of the outer stimulus. The correct interpretation, of which the sleeping mind is quite capable, would imply an active interest and would require that sleep be terminated. Hence, of those interpretations which are possible at all, only those are admitted which are agreeable to the absolute censorship of the somatic wish. It is something like this. It's the nightingale and not the lark, for if it's the lark, love's night is at an end. From among the interpretations of the excitement which are at the moment possible, that one is selected which can secure the best connection with the wish possibilities that are lying in wait in the mind. Thus everything is definitely determined and nothing is left to caprice. The misinterpretation is not an illusion, but, if you will, an excuse. Here again, however, there is admitted an action which is a modification of the normal psychic procedure, as in the case where substitution by means of displacement is effected for the purposes of the dream censor. If the outer nerve stimuli and inner bodily stimuli are sufficiently intense to compel psychic attention, they represent, that is, in case they result in dreaming and not in awakening, a definite point in the formation of dreams, a nucleus in the dream material, for which an appropriate wish fulfillment is sought, in a way similar, see above, to the search for connecting ideas between two dream stimuli. To this extent it is true for a number of dreams that the somatic determines what their content is to be. In this extreme case, a wish which is not exactly actual is aroused for the purpose of dream formation. But the dream can do nothing but represent a wish in a situation as fulfilled. It is, as it were, confronted by the task of seeking what wish may be represented and fulfilled by means of the situation which is now actual. Even if this actual material is of a painful or disagreeable character, still it is not useless for the purposes of dream formation. The psychic life has control even over wishes the fulfillment of which brings forth pleasure, a statement which seems contradictory, but which becomes intelligible if one takes into account the presence of two psychic instances and the censor existing between them. There are in the psychic life, as we have heard, repressed wishes which belong to the first system and to whose fulfillment the second system is opposed. There are wishes of this kind, and we do not mean this in an historic sense, that there have been such wishes and that these have then been destroyed, but the theory of repression, which is essential to the study of psychoneurosis, asserts that such repressed wishes still exist, contemporaneously with an inhibition weighing them down. Language has hit upon the truth when it speaks of the suppression of such impulses. The psychic contrivance for bringing such wishes to realization remains preserved and in a condition to be used. But if it happens that such a suppressed wish is fulfilled, the vanquished inhibition of the second system, which is capable of becoming conscious, is then expressed as a painful feeling. To close this discussion, if sensations of a disagreeable character which originate from somatic sources are presented during sleep, this constellation is taken advantage of by the dream activity to represent the fulfillment, with more or less retention of the censor, of an otherwise suppressed wish. This condition of affairs makes possible a number of anxiety dreams, while another series of the dream formations which are unfavorable to the wish theory exhibits a different mechanism. For anxiety in dreams may be of a psychoneurotic nature, or it may originate in psychosexual excitements, in which case the anxiety corresponds to a repressed libido. Then this anxiety, as well as the whole anxiety dream, has the significance of a neurotic symptom, and we are at the dividing line where the wish-fulfilling tendency of dreams disappears. But in other anxiety dreams, the feeling of anxiety comes from somatic sources. For instance, in the case of persons suffering from pulmonary or heart trouble, where there is occasional difficulty in getting breath. And then it is used to aid those energetically suppressed wishes in attaining fulfillment.